Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
The holiday season is an awesome time to let loose and have fun with your family and friends, but it's also important to keep your body on track by getting in some regular exercise during the month of December. To help keep you on course from gaining unnecessary holiday weight is fitness trainer Joan Pagano from New York City. We also chat with executive coach and author Ruth Garath about being happy in your career. Gina Lee of The Love Zone is also here, and we top things off with a remix from Kelly Clarkson, Mr. Know-It-All.
Capture your need for sound.
Tis the season for so many activities, holiday shopping, office Christmas parties, and celebrations with your family and friends. With the hustle and bustle of December, it's very easy to get off track and not take care of yourself with your regular exercise routine. To help us stay focused even during the hectic holiday season is former trainer to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and author of several books, including Strength Training for Women, Joan Pagano. Joan, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks for having me, Kelly. My pleasure to be here.
Now, to start off, Joan, can we talk about exercise and I guess just how important it is to stay active during the holiday season?
Yes, definitely. There are always going to be times when life intervenes, and it's good to have a backup plan that suits your lifestyle. So there are two different strategies that you can use to get through this hectic holiday season or any time when you get pulled off your main routine. And one of the strategies is to perform shorter duration structured sessions to maintain your present level of conditioning. And the other strategy is to take an active rest from your normal routine and incorporate a baseline of activity into every day. The first strategy refers more to preserving the physiological benefits of your cardio and strength training. And the second is just maintaining this baseline of fitness while you're getting through the busy time until you can go back to your normal routine. So I'm happy to give you an example of each if you'd like.
Go right on ahead.
Okay, let's take two examples, actually, so we can compare. Let's assume they're two women, although the same would apply to men, age 45. One woman, let's call her Jackie. Jackie just completed the New York City Marathon a couple of weeks ago, and she underwent a strenuous training program. She was very dedicated to her cardio and her strength training for months before the event, and she's never been in such great shape. So at 45, she's really pumped and wants to stay in this shape. And the thing is that it takes a lot less to maintain a level of fitness conditioning than to achieve it. So she's already achieved this certain level. What she's going to do is she's going to do a minimum of 3 20-minute workouts in her heart rate training range. And this she would allow for 30 minutes total. So let's say a 5-minute warm-up, 20 minutes in her heart rate training range, which is individualized, and then a 5-minute cool-down. And she's going to do that at least 3 times a week. And for her strength training, she's going to do a minimum of 2 full-body sessions per week, doing 10 exercises for the major muscle groups, which are the hips and thighs, the back, the chest, the shoulders, the arms, and abdominals. And one set of 8 to 12 reps for each of those exercises is enough to maintain your strength level. So by doing these shorter workouts, but very structured workouts, Jackie is going to be able to maintain the level of conditioning, cardio conditioning, and strength training that she achieved in training for the marathon. So that's pretty awesome.
Yes, it is. That's crazy. I love it.
Now,
great.
Let's take Randy, who's also 45 and is a mom with 2 kids, college age, 1 college age, and 1 in high school. She's got parents. She's got in-laws. She is the pivot point of her family. She is action central. She is catering to the needs of the children. She is picking her daughter up from college as she comes into town. She is taking her son around to his holiday activities. She is hosting parties, family parties for the in-laws and for her parents, for the whole family gathered together. She is cooking up a storm. She just cannot get to the gym. So what she's going to do is she's going to try to accumulate doses of exercise during the course of the day. So Randy's going to take the opportunity to walk in 10 or 15 minute increments so that she accumulates 30 minutes of walking most days of the week. She's going to get up in the morning and do some rhythmic limbering on the side of the bed, maybe do some push-up squats and crunches, 15 to 20 reps each, body weight exercises, either in the morning or at some point during the day. It doesn't take very long to do that, and to do those every other day. So most days of the week, she's going to be incorporating or accumulating 30 minutes of moderate level aerobic activity. That's her walking. And then every other day, she's going to be doing some body weight exercises, no equipment required. She can do them on her bedroom floor, in the living room while she's watching TV. And then she's going to stretch out at the end of the day or after her, let's say, after her body weight exercises. So this is considered more of an active rest from her regular routine, and you're going to think more activity as opposed to workouts. So whereas Jackie, the marathon runner, is thinking, she's still thinking workouts, and she's going to schedule those workouts, those three 30-minute aerobic training workouts and her two strength training workouts, she's going to schedule those into her calendar. And Randy is just going to be mindful of accumulating exercise during the course of the day whenever she can in these bits and pieces of free time that she finds in catering to her family's needs.
That's amazing. I think it's, for people to sort of have an idea that there is something for them in all of this.
Yeah, it's a mindset. You need to think, what's going to work for you? Are you going to be the kind of person who can get out there and do your normal routine but condense it, but you're going to stay on track, you're going to be very structured? Or are you the type of person that needs more flexibility, that you can still maintain a baseline of activity so that when, after New Year's, when you realize that you've gained the average 8 pounds,
yuck,
that we gain over the holiday season, you know, that you've gained some weight, that you haven't been as active, that you've been in the kitchen way too much. You know, if you're confronting a major renovation project, shall we call it, of getting your body back, that's much harder than if you maintain some baseline of activity. No matter how minimal, the consistency of doing some baseline of activity prepares you to go back and be ready to intensify and accelerate and go back to a regular routine.
And Joan, something I wanted to ask you, because, you know, December is so nutty, you know, there's so much stress. I think a lot of people don't even realize, because I do think some people get, you know, into the holiday spirit and, you know, they're in the malls and they're shopping, but they don't realize just how much they have got going on. And everything is loosey-goosey. You know, you never know. I find in December, at least in the places that I've worked, you know, I find randomly, like on a Friday, you know, people are popping open beers at the end of the day, or, you know what I mean? It's just a bit more of a festive attitude for the whole month. I'm assuming during these, you know, extra stressful times, even if you're not aware of it, keeping that kind of routine or exercise is going to help you get through the month with your head still on your shoulders.
Sure. It's a great stress buster. And you just reminded me of another great tip, too, that if you're out there doing your errands and you're shopping in the mall, take a pedometer with you and see if you can accumulate the recommended 10,000 steps per day, which is what the experts recommend. That's about 5 miles at an average stride length. But even if you're not getting 10,000, you're probably accumulating more exercise than you realize if you're out and about on your feet all the time, if you're not hopping in a car. But even if you're driving to the mall and then you're walking the mall while you're doing your shopping, it could be very motivating, and you might think twice about having that beer, the extra beer, if you're focused more on getting your steps in for the day. It's kind of shifting your focus, like, okay, you have that beer later, but for now, let's get another 1,000 steps in before we go home, or whatever. You can sort of make a game of it.
Joining us on the show is former trainer to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and author of several books, including Strength Training for Women, Joan Pagano. Make sure to check her out, joanpaganofitness.com. Joan, if you are not someone who regularly exercises, should you at least, you know, try to put in some activity during the month of December, or, you know, should you just wait until everyone else does January?
No, I think that with a tool like a pedometer, this would be perfect for somebody who doesn't normally exercise, because that person should be thinking about accumulating the 30 minutes of walking during the course of the day, or accumulating up to 10,000 steps. That might be too big a leap at first, but what you could do for an inactive person is get a pedometer and just see how many steps you're getting, and then set your own goals for it, for improving it, doubling it, tripling it. I have a friend, actually my webmaster, who got a pedometer this summer, and she's a very active woman. She does yard work, and she's always helping somebody move boxes everywhere, and she takes the stairs at work. Now she works in a legal office as well, and she's taking the stairs. She's walking to speak to colleagues in the office as opposed to phoning them up or pushing a button, and she's lost about 5 pounds. And it's an unusual day that she does not accumulate about 8 or 10,000 steps per day. So if you can develop a mindset of being active, a pedometer is a great tool to help you get started and to chart your progress.
I'm assuming that during the holiday season, it's a good time to set a good example for the family, you know, to show your kids that December is not just about, you know, sitting on the couch eating Christmas candies.
Oh, great idea. Get out there with your family, go for a walk, go do a winter activity, go ice skating, go snowshoeing, go cross-country skiing. You know, get out there and enjoy the season with your family. Go to the park, Central Park, if you live in New York City like I do, or any park or any outdoor area. You know, bundle up and enjoy the outdoors and enjoy the season with your family. So it's family time and it's activity time. And it's festive, and when you come in, you know, you have like a cup of tea instead of the hot chocolate, maybe.
Okay. And I think, like you said, it's a good, opportunity as well to, because, you know, if you've got the kids that are, you know, relatively young or whatever, like 8, 9, 10, I think this is a good time to get them into the idea, especially if they do live in a cold climate. You know, it's good to go skating. It's good to go, you know, like sledding or tobogganing, because those kids are going to get an a workout just running up and down the hill.
Absolutely. They're outdoors. They're getting the fresh air, the benefits of the fresh air. They're getting the benefits of running up and down the hill, as you say, Kelly. And it's a very good role model for parents to show them healthy habits that they can incorporate for the rest of their lives, and also have wonderful memories about those times when they were growing up. Those are very special memories.
Yeah, they are. And it's funny because as you and I are just been talking about this, I'm immediately flashing back to my childhood. Like, I'm a farm kid. So we, you know, we're fortunate enough to have a forest on the farm and hills and fields. And I know for myself, like, we were constantly, especially on our 2-week Christmas vacation, my brother and I and my dad would constantly play hockey, you know, street hockey kind of thing. And to me, that's one of the most important times of my life. And it's made me, I think, enjoy being active, because we were never sort of allowed to sit on the couch too much and just watch television during, you know, Christmas holiday break.
Right. And I grew up in the suburbs in Ohio, and there was a golf course at the end of our street. And when I was a kid, we were going down the slope on the golf course in snow coasters and sleds, and later on cross-country skiing when the golf course was covered with snow. So there are always options. There are always places you can go and things that you can do. And to have that family time, that bonding time with your kids, and to also show them a lifestyle of physical activity that they can build on in their life, and to provide those memories. Those are very nostalgic. They're wonderful memories.
Joan, something I wanted to ask you was, you know, what are your thoughts, I guess, on eating throughout the holidays? Because I know, and you know, a lot of people, I think, throw caution to the wind.
You know, it's really important, again, to develop a mindset about how you're going to deal with this. I was actually just away visiting my family over the weekend, and I ate ice cream and pumpkin pie and things that are normally not even a part of my diet or even desirable to me. But if you start to cave, this is what I found personally, if you start to slide down that slippery slope without the sled, you're going to find yourself in trouble. So you either have to, if you're an all-or-nothing person, then be all-or-nothing. If you're the kind of person who can have a bite or an occasional dessert, then if you have that kind of discipline, that's great. But don't let yourself lose control completely. You really have to maintain some discipline and always keep the bigger picture in mind. You know, that old adage, a moment on the lips, a pound on the hips, It's like really think about what you're putting in your mouth and think about what the trade-off is going to be. That's
right.
Why Weight Watchers is such a wonderful, sensible program, because it really teaches you, yes, you can have that glass of wine or that piece of dessert, but there's a trade-off. You know, you're going to have to compensate during the course of the day for having it. So think about that. Do the juggling act in your head and really think about it before you put it in your mouth.
And is it important, Joan, to know yourself, I guess? Because I think I used to be an all-or-nothing person. For many years, I would not touch, you know, I love ice cream. And for many years, I would not touch it except for my birthday and Christmas. Like, I just would not eat it the rest of the year. And then I think after, like, several years of that, I kind of was like, you know, screw this. I miss my ice cream. And then I went back, you know, too much the other way. And now I'm very much, you know, it's funny because my grandma had told me this since I was a kid, and I never believed her until I was, you know, in my 20s and finally had done this kind of roller coaster ride. And so really I am now about moderation. So I guess A, is it important that you understand who you are, or B, can you become an all or nothing person and then change to moderation, which is, I think, best for everyone?
Right, I think it is too, and I think that I found myself, for instance, in the dining room where I was staying, asking for one scoop of ice cream instead of the normal two-scoop portion.
Right.
You know, and this was an opportunity for me to like sort of pig out a little bit, which is really not my normal MO at all. So then I had to find my own moderation. It was like, okay, they'll serve me these huge portions, but I'm going to have to ask for a small slice of pumpkin pie or one scoop of ice cream. You have to put your own limitations on it. You have to find your own moderation.
And then again, like you said too, because you are going to pay for it later if you do put on those. I didn't realize it was 8 pounds over the holidays. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
And I think,
well, we have also in the U.S. now, Thanksgiving is early for us. I think we probably have 5 weeks. I'm not sure. I didn't look at a calendar. But because it's a little bit earlier in the month,
yeah,
we have like 5 weeks in between. You know, so that's a very long, that's even longer for you to gain more weight.
Right, right.
So you have to like be careful, you know, for Americans or, you know, anybody celebrating this Thanksgiving, be very careful that it doesn't set off a pattern that's going to continue for the next month plus.
Right, because I think a lot of people too, you know, everyone has those things like, oh, here comes January, I'm going to the gym. And you know the gyms make a killing with all these, you know, spirited individuals that decide they're going to go to the gym. And then by February 1st, half of them aren't there.
Yes. And there's something about that, the urgency that you feel after the holidays, whereas if you maintain your consistency, you're not going to feel so like this is an emergency.
Right.
If you maintain those body weight exercises like push-ups, squats, and crunches, and you accumulate your 30 minutes of walking, or if you're able to do your shorter structured sessions where you're really looking at your heart rate training range and you're looking at your strength training, the muscle groups that you're hitting in your strength training program, if you maintain some consistency, you're not going to feel that desperation in January. You're going to say, okay, maybe I gained a few pounds, but at least I didn't, you know, go completely fall off the wagon completely.
Okay, that's excellent. Now, Joan, something else I wanted to touch on, again, because, you know, the holiday season, very festive. What's your thoughts about alcohol consumption when it comes to those extra unwanted calories?
Yeah, well, an ounce of alcohol, I think, has about 7 calories. So just think about that. Think about an average glass of wine, I guess, is maybe about 6 ounces. I'm not sure, but because I think an average glass of wine is more than 42 calories. But anyway,
okay,
they're definitely unwanted calories in alcohol. So there are ways not only to cut back on your drinking, but to have, for instance, a spritzer,
right,
adding club soda or seltzer to wine to make it a lighter drink and less caloric.
Okay, so people need to be conscious of that, not only, you know, again, for I think what is on everyone's mind, which is being careful you don't overdo it so that there's no drinking and driving involved, but also to make sure that you're staying on pace with taking care of yourself throughout the holidays.
Absolutely. Also, overindulging in alcohol often makes you overindulge in food because you lose your ability to moderate at the moment, and the next day when you wake up with a hangover, all you want to do is eat to get rid of it. So it's much better to moderate your alcohol intake and the next morning get up and go for a healthy walk and feel great the next day instead of paying back, you know, the payback for overindulgence moderation, as you said, Kelly, moderation is really key in everything.
And before I let you go, Joan, what major piece of advice do you want to, have people keep in their minds about taking care of themselves throughout the holiday season?
I think develop a mindset. I think that's really important now to think about what your plan is. What is your strategy for the next 5 weeks? Look at what your schedule is like. Are you a busy mom? Are you going to be doing a lot of cooking and family entertaining? Or are you a businesswoman or businessman? Are you going to be going out and doing a lot of client entertaining? Are you the type of person who can manage to get your workouts in, or are you going to have to get more creative about it? It's very individual what will work for each person. So each person right now, what I urge each person to do is just think about your lifestyle and make a plan and do it week by week. Make sure that every week you sort of reassess and see, were you able to meet your goals? Were your goals too ambitious? Do you need to modify them? Or were you just too preoccupied, and do you need to focus more on achieving your goals? And every week sort of tick it off, because then by the time January comes, you're not going to have the major project that you would if you just don't pay any attention to your health habits, your health and fitness habits over the holiday season. I like to call it the survival of the fittest.
I love it. And I love too that it's a mindset, because I think people will feel better about themselves come January if they know that, yeah, they've maybe had a scoop of ice cream or a few chocolates, but they've maintained, and now they're not going to have, like you said, this major renovation project on themselves to lose these 8 to 10 pounds.
Yes, it's so much better. I mean, just look ahead a little bit. If you're tempted, just look ahead a little bit and think about, how do you want to feel on January 2nd?
Right. Okay. That's excellent. Joan, thank you so much for your time and advice. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Kelly. It's always my pleasure.
That's Joan Pagano, former trainer to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and author of several books, including Strength Training for Women. Again, check out her webpage, joanpaganofitness.com.
Stand by.
The Love Zone
with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to The Love Zone. I'm Gina Lee, and today's topic is about keeping your love alive. Let's say you're in a relationship that seems to have lost its spice. You love your partner, but you're not feeling the same passion as you did in the beginning. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but guess what? Relationships take work. Once you're locked in, don't throw away the keys that got you into that person's heart in the first place. We often romanticize what love should look and feel like, thanks Hollywood, but it's really unique for all of us. You have to define what love is for you and what you need in a relationship. So how do you do that? I suggest making a gratitude list. This is often a tool used when feeling low about life. Making a list of the things we're grateful for helps us to see that we're actually quite blessed and that life isn't utter crap. So let's make a gratitude list about our partners. It would be good to have both sides make a list of all the things that they appreciate about the other. From the way they smile to the fact that they always give you the last serving of a meal that you know is their favorite, make it as long as possible and as detailed as possible. Next to each entry, write down why you like it. How does it make you feel? Is some of that spark coming back now? Exchange the list with your partner. You'll both probably be surprised by what each person appreciates in the other. Sometimes all we need is a reminder of why we're in a relationship with a person. It's like hitting the refresh button on your browser. Load the page again and have a good look at what's there. Now you may find that some of the things you appreciated about your partner, he or she doesn't do anymore. So this could be something you can address. We do tend to get lazy in relationships, but if you want to keep it fresh, you have to keep it interesting. Never stop the courtship. Never forget those things you love. Approach your partner with that list in mind, with mutual gratitude. What do you do with something precious? You protect it. You keep it alive. It can be as simple as setting aside a date night for yourselves, once every 2 weeks. recreating those first days when the love was new. Get dressed, get out, and have fun. And it doesn't have to break the bank either. Go for a walk or a bike ride together. Take a salsa class or even a tantric yoga class together. It's great if you're learning something new, because then you'll have new experiences together, and it'll help reaffirm your bond. Maybe spending time together is not the issue. Maybe you're spending too much time together. Now, it's important to still maintain your own interests and hobbies while in a relationship, as we tend to become absorbed into the other person to the point of suffocation. If you used to go to a book club every Thursday night or took martial arts classes every Monday, keep doing it. Keep being the interesting person that attracted your partner to you in the first place. And that's a secret ingredient to keeping things spicy.
Ooh.
now, you may not be in your optimal job or career that you planned on when you were a kid or a bright-eyed college student. In fact, you may only be staying in your current post because of insurance purposes or it pays well enough for you to handle your mortgage payments. Whatever the reasons, now is the time to change how you feel about your current job so that you are in a much better mental state on a regular basis. To help get us to this better place is executive coach and author of the book, From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath. Ruth, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, Ruth, being happy and content seems to be something, you know, very important these days when it comes to someone's work life. Why do you think, you know, this has become such a hot topic?
Good question. I think that, you know, generations shift, Kelly, and I think in previous generations, there was sort of an approach that, you know, work was work, and that's, you know, there was a separation between work and your personal life, and, you know, you just went and did your job. I think today, people want more than that. They want their work to be an expression of who they are, and that's a part of being happy.
And should people really take into account that being happy is important? Because I think, you know, just like you said, a lot of old school folks, you know, just sort of had the mindset, I think, you know, put your time in and hopefully, you know, some days out of the year, you'll be happy at your employment.
Well, I do think it's important. And I'm kind of the old school era, and I want to be happy in my work. So I think it's sort of changing culturally. I think that there are a couple of things. One is that people are recognizing that work is a huge part of our lives. We spend a lot of time at it. We interact with other people, and that should be a pleasurable experience when we can make it such. So, and you know, ultimately what we're learning is through research is that people who are happier, and I'm happy to describe to you what I mean by happiness, if you'd like, but people who are happier at work actually thrive at work. They do better at work than people who are unhappy.
And can you explain, I guess, some of the characteristics? Well, I guess because, you know, my question that I would have, I guess, is, you know, if you are in a job that is not necessarily your first choice, but it's something that you can't leave right now, you know, for financial reasons or whatever, how do you sort of turn things around so that you can look at your situation differently?
Right. Great question. So can I start by explaining what I mean by happiness?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. So when I talk about happiness, I use I describe it in the way that is used by positive psychology. And that means there are three levels of happiness. And the first level is called hedonic. And that means, like, you know how when you buy a car and you can't wait to go to work because the car smells so great, mm-hmm. the new car, even if you don't like your job? Well, that gives you a little bump. It doesn't last long, but that's a bump. The next level is called engagement, and that's where you're doing something that you're both really good at and that you love doing. That's really kind of the secret sauce. And then the third level is meaning. That is where you're involved in something higher than yourself. So here's the thing. If you are involved in a job that you don't quite love, let's look at that second level called engagement, where you're doing something that you're good at and that you really like doing. Maybe there's a way for you to get assignments that use your skills better than they're currently being used. Or maybe you can buddy up with somebody at work who, and there's a great story in the book about someone who did exactly this. She's really good at strategy. She found somebody who was good at the detail work. They buddied up. They worked together really well for 5 years. So they were both able to sort of slice out their work and work in areas that they both enjoyed more. So that's one very powerful way of improving your situation at work. There are others.
Can you give us some examples of those as well?
Well, I'll tell you, this research is fascinating in terms of happiness, right? So researchers have studied people who thrive in naturally difficult situations, you know, inner city environments that are very difficult. And they learned that these people who thrive naturally have some characteristics. They take full responsibility for themselves. They don't blame anybody else for the situation. They seek out mentors. They help other people because they believe that helping comes back tenfold. They focus on their strengths and not on their weaknesses. In other words, we've all got things to work on, but they really focus on their strengths. And they believe that life has meaning. So if you take any of those characteristics, you know, taking full responsibility for yourself at work and not blaming everybody for the situation that you're in, being helpful to others, boy, that is a real strong way of giving yourself a happiness boost. Seeking out mentors within your organization. These are all things that you can do every day to be helpful. And then one that I've not mentioned and I'll mention briefly now is, and I think a lot of people have heard about this, but it's practicing gratitude. Being grateful
literally for the small things. We tend to focus so much on wanting the big things. They're hard to get, and right now, tough in this economy. If we can focus on some of the small things that we're really grateful for, that actually has been demonstrated clinically to relieve depression. I mean, so that's a great happiness booster.
And I actually wanted to ask you something, because I was listening to you talk, and something sort of just came to mind, because it really feels like, you know, it's your attitude. Now, again, you might not be in a job that you want to be in, and it, you know, you're hoping to get to the next level. But if you are sort of, you know, needing to stay there for the time being, I feel like if you really do have a positive attitude about it and can be happy about it, that it will make everything better. And not in like a fake way, but almost like you said, just grasping onto even little things, like the coffee machine is great. You know what I mean? So that's going to make a bit of my day better, you know?
Well, I think that's true. People talk about having a positive attitude, and I think that's important, but the question is, what does that mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it means focusing on the things that are positive in your environment. And for most of us, even if we're in a difficult environment, there's something positive around us. And I have another story that I just love in the book about a time that I'm a very healthy person, but I was in the hospital for 4 days. And on the last day, this fellow came in, and he was preparing the bed next to mine for a post-op patient to come in. And he was just fabulous. He was scrubbing the bed, and he was explaining to me how important his job was. I mean, this is a guy who's literally, you know, scrubbing toilets, scrubbing the bed. He said, because this is a person who's just had surgery, we have to make sure there are no germs in this room.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he told me a moving story about his daughter who has a spinal problem. And anyway, as he left, he told me that he and his son were going to be playing guitars at their church over the weekend. This is a guy who did not have an easy life.
Mm-hmm.
Worked several jobs. He had a disabled daughter. He was not, you know, CEO of a corporation. And this guy was genuinely happy. I was smiling when he left the room.
Joining us on the show is executive coach and author of the book, From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath. Check her out, www.garath.com. Ruth, is it important to be sort of self-aware, you know, how you act and behave at work? Because I'm assuming if you constantly have some kind of negative vibe going on, that this can impact your, you know, your well-being and especially in the long term at work.
I love that question, Kelly. You know, I write about this. I say I have a chapter called Free Range Emotions Tanks Careers. You know, you really just can't, you know, it's a group dynamic in a work environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all have to bring our best foot forward to help in these make the environment a positive. So given an example of, you know, having a negative attitude at work is like wearing a sign on your back that says just ignore me.
Right.
Because that's what will happen. People say, oh, that, you know, you ask them to do something and it's always a difficult response. So listen, you know, you think about the kind of people that you like to work with, right? They're helpful. How can I help you? What can I do? Hey, that, love that dress. You know, anything
right.
That's positive. And these are the kind of people who are naturally happy and you're, as you said, not fake. And we know, again, through research, that people who are naturally happy at work, who meaning they are not faking it, and you may not have been born happy, but you're working on some of these techniques, and you're being helpful, and you're taking responsibility, all that sort of thing. These are people who, in the work environment, get better reviews from their bosses, they get more support from their peers, they're healthier outside of work, and they make more money.
That's amazing. And I think that's, you know, not the more money part, but if you do have this great attitude, I think good things are basically set to come to you.
Well, exactly. And the other thing, Kelly, that's so important is when the bad things come, because look, life is life. You know,
mm-hmm.
We all get hit with things. When the bad things come, if you've developed these skills, these characteristics, these traits, you will be much more resilient. And that simply means that we bounce back from life's inevitable difficulties more quickly than we would otherwise. We don't stay we don't stay emotionally depressed or tanked
right.
For a long time. And that's a key to living a good life because, like I said, things happen, illness, you know, you lose a job, a relationship, something. But how you handle that, your ability to bounce back, it's important to take the time and recognize pain and go through it and experience it. Don't try to fight it. But How long you stay in there really is dependent on the skills that you have that allow you to move through it in a healthy and a quicker way than you would otherwise.
What do you say for a person, like let's say, you know, a person has lost a job, and let's say it's a job that they actually really wanted and really enjoyed having, and then it's, you know, it's gone poof. And then, you know, and let's say too that they have worked super hard to get there, and when they got the job, it almost felt like everything that they had to go through to get there was justified, because it's like, I finally got, you know, the cherry on top. And if it's taken away from you, and then you inevitably, I'm assuming this person would go through a rough time, I suppose that person needs to almost learn from that experience, and then it can push them forth through the rest of their life, like you said, to be resilient, because life is a set of ups and downs.
Well, it is. And, you know, the truth is, and certainly in my experience and in, again, the research, that we do learn from our difficulties. There's no perfect path. And you know, the example is if a baby, you know, the first time a baby tried to walk, if they fell down, they said, oh, I failed. I'm not going to try that again. Well, we wouldn't be walking around today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are inevitable ups and downs. And yes, sometimes we lose things that are so precious to us. But, you know, it's an opportunity to say, okay, what do I have to do now? What do I want to do now to create the kind of life that I want? And that means, you know, when we're not working, our job is to go find a job. And we take every day and we work through every day with that goal in mind. And persistence does pay off.
Ruth, can you tell us more about your book, From Hired to Happy? What do you want your readers to take away from it?
Well, I wanted to write a book that would help people develop strong professional skills that would help them at work, and also build resilience, which helps them at work and in life. I had the benefit of being, my first job was with IBM, and in those days the training was extensive. And I've been consulting to some of the largest companies in the world for a long time, and this doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, what's called the value proposition, meaning that people come into a job, they're not expected to stay there cradle to grave, right?
Right.
So I wanted something that would say, hey, listen, you know, here are some skills. They're doable, they're buildable. And if you learn these and if you do these, you will have a much better chance of thriving at work and in life than if you don't learn them. And I wanted to create, you know, it's not a big book. It's filled with stories. It's got exercises. I'm hoping it's fun and that people could kind of buddy up and learn together from it and help each other. So it's really meant to be imminently readable, something that and skills that you can build upon.
Now, if you have someone who is you know, maybe because they have been bumped and bruised along the way and they haven't, because I think, you know, again, as you were speaking to me, I felt like I got a bit of a light went off. And I feel like, you know, there's two types of people, like either if you take the bumps and bruises and you learn from it, like you mentioned earlier, and then you try to be better and more resilient and realize that life is ups and downs. And then I feel like there's another person where it's always going to be like, well, life sucks. Like this has happened to me. And so something else is going to happen to me. So if you have a person that's in that second category that is mainly, you know, more upset and negative, can they turn themselves around? Like can they make themselves, you know, come to a happy place and then it'll start to show in their work and in their home life?
I believe that the answer to that question, and it's a great question, is absolutely yes. And it comes by taking responsibility for everything that happens to us. Now, this is a big, big topic, and it has many tendrils. But ultimately, let's take it at its most base level, or I would say probably one of the easier levels. You know, sometimes when things are happening to us at work and we're blaming everyone else, if we take a step back, we might say, how did I contribute to that situation? Did I disengage, you know, because I thought I wouldn't get promoted, so I just disengaged? Did I work hard enough? And you know what, if I think I did all of that and I still feel like, you know, hey, I should be promoted, then we have an opportunity, you have an opportunity, your listener has an opportunity to make an appointment with your boss and say, you know, I'm really devoted to this job and I really want to excel. I'd like to develop a plan with you because, you know, frankly, I'd like to grow. So I'd like to make sure that I have a good plan in place to do that. So there are things that we can do that we often just don't do to help us move along, to take control of our path.
Now, people that, you know, do have, I guess, a more happy characteristic to them, and I know that's a bunch of different levels, I'm assuming that, you know, they are going to be more successful in life, just because it's like a positive force that everyone is seeing. What sort of characteristics, you know, should people be on the lookout for to have to help themselves go forward with their career and be better and enjoy their life more?
Yes, great. Well, again, the first one is to really get your mind around this concept of taking responsibility for yourself, full responsibility. If things aren't going the way you want, then the question is, how can you make it better? Find mentors. This is huge. You know, find people who've walked the path before, who are willing to spend a little time with you to help you walk the path. Request, you know, very rarely are mentors assigned to us. We seek them out and we ask for their help. Always be helpful. Always take a moment and you know, open a door, even if it's simple, open a door for someone or just something simple, or recognize that someone did a great job at giving a presentation, or you read a paper they wrote. You know, so these are characteristics that, again, are demonstrated by naturally happy people who thrive in extraordinarily difficult situations. And we've learned that these characteristics can be learned by other people. And can I add one more thing,
mm-hmm.
Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, the mind is a powerful thing. This is huge. Basically, what's going on in our heads all day is a sort of like running thought process. We're thinking thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts a day. And the vast majority are negative. You know, oh, why did I say that? Oh, I'm wearing the wrong shoes. You know, oh, I need to lose weight. A million things going on. Self-inquiry, and I think you mentioned it earlier, if we can just get a handle on some of what's going on in our head, because our emotions are generated by our thoughts. If we're pounding ourselves with these negative thoughts all day long, we're not going to be very happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're feeling ourselves really not happy, situationally depressed, you know, we can say, okay, what is going on in my head? Try to get a hold of what you're thinking. Find that thought and then replace it with what is called an equally true but different thought, something that will make you feel better, but that's true. So, for example, I give an example about this. When I was writing the book, I got to a part, you know, have you ever done a project where you write in the middle and you think, I can never finish this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just too much, right? So I got to one of those days, and I didn't realize that's what I was thinking, but I was starting to feel really down. So I said, okay, what am I thinking? And I realized I was thinking, oh, I've taken on too much. It's, you know, I've never written a book before. This is tough. I'm not going to get it done. I'm going to embarrass myself. People know I'm writing it. And if I don't finish it, I'll feel bad. And then I thought, okay, what's an equally true but different thought? And the difference, that thought was, gee, in my career in consulting and in managing organizations, very often I hit this very same point where things were just so hard that it just seemed like there was no way through. And then you just take a step back, reassess, put in place a plan, and, you know, I always got through it. My teams always got through it, my organizations. So I thought, that's what I have to do now, and that's what I did. And, you know, I took a break, walked my dogs, came back to work, and I felt much better. And I had to keep doing that because I was in a tough part of the writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very important thing. When you feel badly, ask yourself what you're thinking and replace that thought, which is, you know, an equally true but different thought that makes you feel better. And you'll start to condition your mind to see things in a more positive way.
Do you suggest, Ruth, that people, because I know we've just been speaking a lot about being self-aware, and again, you just mentioned too, and I guess I didn't even think about it, but it's true. There's thousands of thoughts running through our heads every day. Do you think for a person to be more successful, or at least to get a handle on themselves, is if they actually get into the routine of sitting down and writing a little bit about their day to sort of see it on paper? Because I think I know it's helped me. So I'm just wondering if that's something that, and I know people always say, oh, I don't have time. But even if you only do it twice or three times a week and you're just seeing how you're thinking and actually having that accountability, because I'm very accountable when I write my journals. I'm like, you know, you need to know that you did this, or but not negative, just, you know, acknowledging that I did it, whether it's positive or negative, and then moving forward.
Yeah, I think journal writing can be a very powerful process. There's some evidence that says, you know, you really kind of want to, if you're writing about negative stuff, don't dwell on it too much.
Right.
Write it, get
yeah.
it done. Because in a way, by continually writing about the negative, you're reinforcing that thought.
Mm-hmm.
So just be aware of that. The idea of sitting quietly and being in touch with what you're thinking and feeling is huge, whether it's through journaling, whether it's meditation, taking a walk, you know, or some people go for a run, let themselves just get in touch with what's going on in their heads. And, you know, the bottom line is that we are driven by what we think. And the more we can evaluate how well those thoughts are working for us, a lot of us are just on automatic pilot mentally. So, yes, I think journaling, it can be a very powerful tool, Kelly.
And what do you say, Ruth, because I just want, you know, people listening, if they are in these shoes, you know, because, again, just like you just said, that word automatic, I think so many of us are in automatic pilot mode, like, you know, Monday I do this, Tuesday I do this, and then, you know, the weeks and months go by and you don't even know that all of a sudden, you know, another year has gone by. What do you say to someone who maybe is in a career or a job that they don't want to be in? And I know off the top we mentioned that maybe for financial reasons they have to be there. But what happens if they're not? And what happens if they've just gone into automatic pilot? What do you say to these people to get a kick in the pants to change things and go after their dreams?
Well, first you have to want it. First you have to say, you know, this, I want more from work and from life. And then once you decide you really want something, it's amazing how, you know, then you say, well, okay, so I want this. Now, what do I have to do to get it? Who do I have? And very often when it comes to a job, it's who do I have to get to know, or who can help me with this? Who, you know, and that's what networking is about. And by the way, let me just say something about networking. We, you know, there's networking and then there's networking. And the old days, kind of the networking concept was, who can help me with something? And that's fine to have that. You know, obviously when we're networking, sometimes that's what we're thinking. But a great way to network is to connect with people that you like and say, what can I do for you? How can I help you? When somebody calls me, that's what I always say, how can I help you? Or when I'm networking, how can I help you? Because if I'm willing to help somebody and I can do something for them, first of all, I get a boost. I love to help other people. It just feels great. And then second, if I have to call somebody and say, gee, you know, do you know this person? Would it be, could you, you know, isn't that easier at that point? So helping other people, being helpful to other people. And the other thing about is just get out and get into, you know, there are all these, certainly in the U.S., I don't know if they're in Canada, meetup groups.
Right.
You know, there are lots of ways to connect with people who are interesting and doing fascinating things and just kind of get out in the world and see what's going on. That's half the problem. We just tell ourselves, well, there's no other interesting job available. And I just can't believe that that's true.
And Ruth, where do people get a copy of your book?
Well, you can get my book at Amazon or at barnesandnoble.com. And again, it's From Hired to Happy, and Ruth Garath, G-E-R-A-T-H.
Excellent. Ruth, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it.
Kelly, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
That's executive coach and author of the book From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath. Again, check her out, www.garath.com.
Bring on the
Remix.
Best to know it all, baby. Think you know it all, but you don't know a thing at all.
Clarkson with Mr. Know-It-All, remixed by Lian Keegan on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, including Joan Pagano, Ruth Garath, and the always amazing Gina Lee of The Love Zone. And you know what? I am very excited to tell you that next week is our 100th edition of the Kelly Alexander Show, and we have an awesome surprise guest for you to commemorate the occasion. Now, I would love to tell you who it is, but I'm going to keep that secret just a little bit longer. But I do want to give you a hint. This person has helped sell millions of albums around the world. Now, as per usual, I want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Gary Ryan Blair. We only live once, but once is enough if we do it right. Live your life with class, dignity, and style so that an exclamation rather than a question mark signifies it. Have a wonderful week. Any comments or questions, always appreciated. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Take care. You and I'll talk soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.